G'day. Welcome to the Financial Bloke Podcast, the podcast for people seeking the wisdom needed to grow their family's wealth and live a happier, healthier, and more prosperous life. My name's Ben Law, and I am the Financial Bloke. Welcome back to the Wealth and Wisdom Podcast. If any of you have been listening to my podcast for the last couple of years, you'll know that I'm more than a little interested in finding out how to be the best of the best. I grew up in the 80s, and like any teenage boy at that time, I was a huge fan of Top Gun. I'd watch that movie over and over again until I wore out the old VHS tape. One of my favourite quotes in the movie was from the character Commander Mike Metcalf, or callsign Viper, and he said, "Gentlemen, you are the top 1% of all naval aviators. The elite, the best of the best. We'll make you better." By now, you're probably thinking, where the bloody hell are you going with this, Ben? Well, today we've got Ian McLean back on the podcast again. Ian was with us at episode number 35, which was one of our more popular episodes, where we discuss what the top 20% of beef producers will do to make themselves the best. Now, this was based on his experience and also on the data in the Australian Beef Report 2020. For those of you who don't know who Ian is, he's the Managing Director of Bush Agribusiness based in Toowoomba. He works with the large and small pastoral businesses, helping them understand and improve business performance. He enjoys working with and learning from the top performing pastoral businesses. And if anyone would have the data or the knowledge, it's Ian. So why have we got Ian back on again? Well, the 2023 Australian Beef Report has just been released, and I want to dig into what the factors are that make the best of the best today. Now, let me be really clear. If you're thinking, "Hey Ben, I'm not a beef producer, so this episode won't be for me," I'd recommend you still stay tuned. The lessons that Ian has extracted apply to not only beef producers, but all agricultural producers. To back this up, in episode 54, a key piece of advice from Tess Cam was to listen to producers and researchers from other industries, as you might happen to learn far more than you expected. Now, for all those Top Gun fans out there, we better get cracking before my ego starts writing checks my body can't cash. Without further delay, welcome, Ian.
G'day, Ben. Very good to be with you again.
Yeah, it's great to have you back on the podcast again. Now, for anyone who hasn't had a chance to listen to your last episode, can you just give us a really quick summary on your background and, you know, also the background of the Australian Beef Report, which has just come out this year, and why you think it's a valuable resource for producers?
Yes, Ben, thanks. So, my background, a bit of a goanna track to get to where I am now, but grew up in the bush in southwest Queensland, and was quite interested in applying sort of business principles back to farm businesses. So studied accounting, worked in an accounting firm for a while, and then was fortunate to work with or run into Phil Holmes in the Northern Territory. I was fortunate for him to take me on as a mentor, and having mentors is very important in anyone's career. And that helped set me on the path to be able to set up Bush Agribusiness. Been going for 12 years there now, and we work with pastoral businesses across extensive and northern Australia, helping them understand their business performance, improve it, and also bring them together to share knowledge. A lot of what we do is bringing people together to share knowledge. We don't know it all and don't pretend to know it all, but it's pretty powerful when you get some good data and some knowledgeable producers in the room and bring that together. The Australian Beef Report came out. We identified there's a bit of a gap in the industry on what actual industry performance was, and having a resource for profit-focused producers to understand what drove performance and what they could do to improve it. So in 2017, we took the leap of putting together the first publication, which looked at the performance of the whole of the Australian beef industry at the family level by herd size, region and market for north and south, and found that there was demand for that out there and that there was a need for independent, unbiased information on industry performance for producers and industry stakeholders. So since then, we've made it a triennial publication, releasing a second one in 2020, and we've just released the third one now in 2023, which has three components: the pastoral panel, which is one we launched in the 2021, which is something that I quite like. It's where we've gone out to a number of producers and asked some probing questions to understand how they approach business management, how they approach problems, and documented their responses. And it's quite a good summary of how some leading producers think and approach management. We've also got a guest chapter, which we do in each report. This one's on managing herd fertility and productivity. Well, we've got three gentlemen who've spent a career in research, extension and advising beef producers on managing fertility and productivity and tried to bottle lifetime of their knowledge into quite a good summary of all the science and research and practice in that area. And then we've also updated the financial performance of the industry. So we've got 12 years of performance for the whole beef industry, north and south, by region, herd size and market. Summarising that and looking at, you know, particularly the last 3 years since the last report, which has been a period of very high prices, and having a look at what impact that had on business performance in that time. Ben?
It's interesting. I've got my copy right here, which is highlighted all through, but my favourite part was obviously the pastoralist comments. And I liked one of the questions that you posed, which I thought, I wonder if when you started doing this, you thought it would become so important. But question four was, how do you manage for long-term profitability and debt serviceability in an environment of rising input costs, rising interest rates, and falling cattle prices? And yeah, I've got that highlighted the hell out of it. Did you know back at the time when you started writing this for the 2023 that, you know, we'd be running into the times that we are now?
No one could predict what's happened now, but we can't. You know, our approach has been to encourage people to, you know, to take a long-term view that beef prices can't stay at record highs forever, interest rates can't stay at record lows. And a lot of what we're about is helping people understand their performance so they can ride the highs and the lows and maximise their performance in the long term. And we find that the successful producers do take that long-term perspective.
Yeah, and it's interesting, Ian, is one of the things that I noticed when I went through this, because I was highlighting it for my dad, because he'll want to have a, he'll probably read it from front to cover as well. But one of the things is I noticed is most of the advice that were coming from these pastoralists would pretty much apply to any industry, whether it be agriculture, whether it be non-agriculture, whether it be, you know, your cropping, your livestock. They're pretty much universal, you know, statements. And I think, you know, one of my most favorite ones in there was knowing there's a problem developing is just as important as the actions you take to correct it. And I think if anyone read just that section, even if they're in the beef industry or not, I think they get a huge amount of value. And that's only probably, you know, 20% of the report.
That's right. And there's a lot to be learned from other industries and other regions. And, you know, I've just got back from taking a group of our clients for a tour of Tasmania and Victoria. We went and saw an intensive dairy in southern Victoria, which is about as far as from an extensive beef operation as you can get. But there was a lot they could learn from that, just in terms of how they, the systems, the staff, the capital management, the herd management, the grass management. Very different application, but yeah, there's a lot of knowledge out there, and sometimes if you get outside your own backyard, you can get that perspective. That's what we've tried to do in that pastoral panel, is just capture some of that knowledge that's out there and put it all in one spot.
Because I know some people get turned off by numbers. You know, they say things like, oh, you know, I can't concentrate on those numbers, or the numbers are all rubbery, or I don't really know how to do those numbers. But that's the balance I love in this, Ian, is it does go right into the nitty-gritty of all the numbers. So you can crunch those numbers, but there's also general themes and good advice. And I think it's almost like a, you know, a tribe of mentors there in many ways, giving their little bits of advice to specific questions, which is great. But where I want to dig into next, mate, is if I was running a beef business or any rural production business for that matter, you know, I'd want to know the key performance indicators or the KPIs which I need to be maximizing, or I need to be all over or know what they are to maximize my chance of success in both the good and the bad times. I'd call KPIs sort of levers. They're levers you can pull to improve your business outcomes. Now, when we discussed this the other day, you sort of said to me, you reckon there's four KPIs that producers really need to know and focus about. So before we get into those four KPIs, because we're going to go into those today, in your eyes, Ian, how important are these KPIs? And more importantly, how important is it to know the right ones?
Very important. It's a cliche, Ben, and I probably don't like using it, but it's true, where you can't manage what you don't measure. If you don't have some good data, some good systems in the business to be able to record how you're going against the things that are important, and there's a lot of data collected which isn't collated, not much done with, but just having simple systems to collect the data that's important is a big part of it. And the other aspect of KPIs, I think, is accountability and the importance of accountability, and it's something that the good performers do well. We're pretty fortunate to work with a lot of family businesses and also a lot of pastoral company businesses, and there's a lot each can learn from each other, and we do bring them together quite a bit. But one advantage of the pastoral company model is that it's got that inbuilt accountability. You don't become a manager of a pastoral company operation without being very good at generating the data, interpreting the data, reporting up, whether that be against budgets or stock numbers or things like that. And if things don't add up, there's a pretty quick please explain. Private businesses don't necessarily have that unless they work with a business like us, but the good ones tend to have that accountability on themselves. They might have a head office there ringing them up or asking for information, but they have that information themselves. And there's lots of quite good software solutions out there now. There's probably some not so good ones also, but I think it's up to the businesses to have their system, and that's more important than the software there to get that information. Just have basic information around herd numbers, productivity, grazing load, things like that, so you can measure things over time, see how you're tracking, and generate those KPIs.
It's interesting, and we won't go into this today, but that's why I love the benchmarking side. I know when I had my financial advice business, I used to measure everything, and I used to watch trends within my business and try and manage the KPIs. The problem was is I couldn't manage it against anyone else. So I didn't know if I was doing, like I thought I was doing well, but I didn't know whether I was doing well against my peers. And I think that's a really important part. It gives you, you know, the context of those KPIs. How far off am I? How close am I? What numbers should I actually be focusing more of my energy on? But the first KPI you talked about, or we talked about the other day, mate, was the skill and attitude of the manager. Now, let's start with that one. Can you just unpack that one for us?
Well, yeah, and it's not really a KPI, but I just, when we talked about what was important, I thought we had to put that in there because that's a critical component. There's many other things that are there, but the skill and the attitude of the manager has a big impact on business performance, and it's a hard thing to really measure and quantify, but it does come through. And what we find is that the skilled managers are hungry for information. They want to know things. They look for a lot of information. There is a lot of information out there, an increasing amount, which makes it hard to sift through. But as part of that, they've got very well-developed critical thinking skills and a good bullshit detector. There is an abundance of bullshit in the beef industry, and they're very good at sifting that out, knowing what's important. And they want to know how they're performing and how they can improve, where they're performing well and where areas for improvement are. And I think that helps drive their performance, just that attitude there of wanting to know, seeking information, weighing up what's important, discarding what's not, and understanding how they're performing, particularly against their peers.
It's a real attitude thing, isn't it? I mean, I find that right across. If someone's curious, that's a good trait you want to see in your managers or your people. If they're curious, they're always wanting to know, are we doing well? What could we do better, etc. And one of the points that I noticed in the report, one of the quotes in there, mate, was tomorrow's business manager needs to recognize that time working on the business behind a desk, in front of a computer, is worth far more to the business than being on the back of a horse in the business. And I think that's a real important differential between those who succeed and those who struggle, is that ability to cultivate time to actually work on the business, not in the business.
That's right. And that's a challenge in any business, particularly as it grows. But yeah, it's something those that do well, time management and just taking a step back and having a look at the big picture. And I think it came from one of your previous podcasts, Ben. I can't remember who it was, but there's a saying I liked in there about the analogy between head down, bum up, and then bum down, head up, where, you know, you got to get in and work, but then also it's important to sit back, sit above it all, have a look around, see the big picture, work on the business there. So it's not all about being busy. Something I talk about quite a bit is, you know, 30 or 40 years ago, it was enough for producers to, you know, work very hard, leave the checkbook locked up in the bottom drawer. That was a pretty good recipe for success. Now, you know, still need to work hard, still need to be very targeted with spending, but you know, we're dealing with multi-million dollar businesses, and agricultural business managers need the skills that managers of multi-million dollar businesses and any other industry need. And that's a big part of the work that we do is working with those managers and helping sort of further build their skills in areas where we can.
Yeah, excellent. The next KPI, mate, you mentioned was herd productivity. So can you just unpack what is it and how do you specifically measure it?
So herd productivity is a critical one for any beef business. And what it really is how efficient is that beef business at turning grass into beef. And at the end of the day, that's the core business. You want to have the land management to have as much grass there as you can, manage it so it'll last the season or the year. But then it's about having the herd and the production system on it that will most effectively convert it into beef. So it's about the efficiency of production rather than the quantity of production. And it still surprises me where you have two businesses that might be side by side, look like similar countries, similar cattle, but one is just producing a lot more beef, trucking out a lot more beef and generating much more income for the same land area, the same amount of grass eaten. So for a breeding herd, it's just lifting the reproductive rate. That's the number one driver, and that's why I've got the chapter in this report on managing herd fertility. It's surprising just what a 2, 3, 4% difference in weaning rate over time makes in terms of the kilos trucked off. Mortality rate, lowering that obviously has a big impact on productivity and increasing sale weight and weight for age as well. We've found those factors there explain most of the difference between businesses in herd productivity. For a growing business or a trading business, it's the ADG and also the average weight of the animal. But it's just having that focus on kilos produced. This is what something we notice across businesses, but particularly with some of the quite successful pastoral company businesses. They've got a good understanding of kilos produced, and that's right through their ranks, where they're saying, right, how many kilos are we going to produce this year? Are we over or under budget? How many did we produce last year? What are we doing to maximising that? And just that efficiency of production drives the income of the business. Beef price is important year to year, but when we look over time, beef price doesn't explain any of the differences between businesses. It does between years, but not between businesses over time. It's how productive they are. And that's something that every business, regardless of location and scale, can focus on, because small changes there will make a big change to their bottom line.
Mm. And I suppose, I think you said earlier, it was a multiple disciplinary area. So there's a whole lot of factors that go into this. So it's not as simple as just focusing on just the fertility number, is it?
No. And that's, you know, the challenging thing. And you know, a lot of your listeners will be very well aware of this, but, you know, running a successful modern agricultural business is very multidisciplinary. There's lots of things going on. It requires quite a skill set and access to external expertise as well. But, yeah, there's a lot of things, grazing management, genetics, animal production, people management. It's juggling all of that to drive it. And it's not easy, but those that do it well reap the rewards from it.
And so for someone who's not measuring that, if you're in a business and you're saying, righto, we really need to start stepping up and trying to work on these things, is the first step to start using the software to start collecting the numbers to start being able to produce that? Is that the first step, mate, or is there another step they need to be taking, would you suggest?
Good question. Yes, software can be a good tool in the process, but it's thinking about what you want to measure first. So, you know, understanding your herd numbers, something we talk about, you know, being able to reconcile your herd over a year. What did you start with? What did you purchase? What was your natural increase, less what you sold, less what died, equals closing. A lot of beef businesses have trouble doing that, which is a challenge in understanding their herd numbers and inventory. Having that as a starting point, and that helps you determine what that your grazing load is, how many AE or DSE you're running, how many kilos you're producing, what your weaning rate is or reproductive rate and mortality rate. That starts there, and then you can identify where you're strong, where to dig into it more, and then that's where software or even benchmarking can come in to help generate those more detailed KPIs for you over time. But it does start with businesses having good herd data, knowing their numbers and being able to look at changes over time.
Okay, excellent. Now, the third KPI, I know the first one wasn't like a typical data KPI, but I think it's still an important point, as you mentioned. But the third is expenditure management. Now, I don't know a farmer that isn't focused on lowering expenses. So is this about having the lowest cost structure you can possibly have, or is it something else?
No, definitely not having the lowest cost structure. And in some, it might be about increasing the cost structure, spending money in the right area where you can spend $1 and make $2. And when we look at beef business performance, we look at quite a number of businesses. The lowest cost businesses aren't the best, and you can't starve profit into a business. And it can be the low-hanging fruit, and you do get people, particularly from the outside of the industry, come in and say, oh, we need to cut costs, do that. But as you say, generally farmers are pretty frugal, so there's not a lot to be done in that area. There's probably three main ones to look at. One's the direct herd expenditure, or money spent directly on the herd, in things like supplementation, animal health, contracting, genetics and other things. What we find pretty consistently is the top performers spend less on their herd but get more back in productivity. And what that tells us is that not that they're being tight and not spending money, but they're spending it better. They're saying, okay, if I'm going to put my hand in my pocket to pull out discretionary dollars to pour down an animal's throat or do something with, I want to know that I'm going to get $2 or $3 back for every dollar I spend, or I'm not spending it. So it's really making sure that expenditure is targeted rather than low. The other one is labour efficiency. That is the biggest driver of the overhead cost structure, that and scale. If a business has less than 1,500 AE or 12,500 DSE for every full-time equivalent, its cost structure per animal unit will be higher just because there's not enough animals to spread that cost of labour over. So understanding that is important. The other one is operating scale, which I'll talk about a bit more later on, but understanding economies of scale, because that can make the per animal unit costs high if there's not enough animals to spread that over. There's strategies to address it, but it's not just being frugal, it's not just not spending money, it's just understanding, you know, how targeted your herd expenditure is, whether labour efficiency is a problem for you or not, whether economies of scale is a problem or not, and having strategies to address it and looking for areas where you can spend money if it's going to provide that payback to you.
Mm. And sometimes I suppose there's a bit of a, you know, it's not necessarily about increasing profit, it's about increasing lifestyle and capacity yourself. So in other words, you know, you may not have the right number of employees per animals, but you want to take some time off, you want to go on holidays, you want to go see the kids. You know, there is that balancing thing. And sometimes you just need to employ labor when it's not as efficient, because without the employees, you can't free yourself up to think, to build scale or build productivity. Do you find that sometimes there's the, in some businesses, there's the whole, we employ people even though it's not the most efficient time to, but that then allows us to spend the mental time or the physical time doing the more high value jobs?
That's right. And it's, you know, part of stepped growth in any business. And sometimes you've got to invest in front of the curve to be able to get to a point where you can afford it. And that applies to any business. And also part of that is letting go of some of the operational. Something that's been great to see with some of the people we work with over time is where they've, you know, gone from being very operational in the business, been able to grow it, get some very good people there, and they actually find, well, they're better at processing the cattle or inducting the cattle or doing the paddock moves than I am, so I'm better off out of the road, leaving them to it. I can go and do other things. And that lets those people coming up below grow as well, while the manager or the owner is focusing on other things. So that's important in terms of people development, but also, yeah, freeing up time to focus on those things as well.
Yeah, I call it, you know, $30 an hour jobs versus $10,000 an hour jobs. You know, you need to be filling your day as a farm owner or manager with the $10,000 an hour jobs. And I can give a great example of, I had some clients I work with a number of years ago where they were absolutely flat strapped. Their expenses were really low. They ran a pretty good business, but they just had no mental capacity to really think about anything. And I remember they employed someone freed up their time, and within 2 years, they purchased another block and they doubled the profitability of the business just because, in this case, mum and dad had the capacity to be able to go and have the conversations around productivity, to be looking at, you know, buying another block, to be able to be reviewing their debt, how do we get a better rate with our bank, et cetera. It just was a complete turnaround for them. But it became very clear to me that they employed the right person, not just anybody.
Yeah, that's right. And that you know, sometimes you go through the process a couple of times to get the right person, but that is critical. But yeah, freeing those people up to step up and, you know, manage the multi-million-dollar business rather than be purely operational. There's still an operational aspect, and that's why people do it. They enjoy what they're doing. But yeah, the business side of it's important as well, as you say.
Yeah. And now the fourth KPI was operating scale. And this is a really contentious subject. And from the last episode, we got a lot of producers' feedback saying, well, we're not at that scale, so we can never get there. So why bother? And sometimes we have to be realistic about the limitations to achieve the ideal scale. So can you just talk about scale in general, mate? And I think we just want to touch on the fact that if for some producers, they're either now or over the medium term can't get to that scale, what should they be focusing on instead?
Yeah, Ben, this is a major structural issue for the industry, which I don't think gets enough attention, and it is very confronting for many. So in the beef report data, where we've got specialist beef producers that are family operators with more than 200 head, 53% of those in the north have less than 800 head, and 83% in the south have less than 800 head. And both those cohorts with less than 800 head operated at a loss on average over the last 3 years, which is 3 years of high prices, when we put a full value on their time, which we've got to do if we're going to look at the business properly. Yep. Now, that's pretty confronting. But understanding economies of scale is, you know, a pretty important economic concept, is critical for people to understand whether scale is a constraint for their business and what to do about it. Small producers can be successful, and I want to stress that, but they do need strategies in place to address that lack of scale. Now, that's going to come from targeting those labour efficiency targets I spoke about before, 1,500 AE or 12,500 DSE per full-time equivalent. If they've got less animals than that, then that's great. That means it's a part-time job and they can go off-farm and bring in household income and help their quality of life there and also reduce the cost structure. If they're off the place, they're not using electricity, puncturing tyres or using diesel at the place. There's also leasing or gisting or using this management skill on other people's properties and with other people's capital is an option, and that's something that I think is going to become more and more prevalent. We talk about that in the beef report as the barrier to entry through capital required becomes higher and higher with land values. Those with the intellectual capital to manage good operations but don't necessarily have the financial capital, I think we'll be looking to partner more with businesses to do so in a mutually beneficial way. And we're seeing that a bit. It's still sort of not that common now, and it requires, you know, the right people on both sides of the arrangement, but that is important. But it is confronting, but I just think it is critical to understand whether scale is a constraint for the business and what to do about it. And for the majority of businesses with less than 1 to 2,000 head, scale is a constraint. So there needs to be a strategy in place to address it.
Okay. I'm guessing there's a big difference in scale profitability levels between the northern beef producers and the southern beef producers. Have you got any comments around that?
Yes, and there's a contrast there. Generally speaking, the north has more operating scale but less productivity, and the south has good productivity but less operating scale on average. So when we look through that, which we do in the beef report, it's those businesses that have good productivity or overall operating efficiency. So that's not just herd productivity, which we spoke about. That's targeted herd expenditure, labour efficiency as well, and have sufficient operating scale. They're the ones that are generating healthy profits over time, north and south. And that's something we've spoken about in all the beef reports we've prepared so far, as the barriers to profit. If a beef business has operating efficiency, those things I spoke about, and operating scale, it will generate good profits. I think they're important to understand. And again, just understand if it's a constraint And if it is, what are the strategies to address it? Is expansion an option? Is capital limiting? Are there other expansion options? Or is it a matter of getting off-farm income, making the business a part-time business, which still can be quite successful, but just being aware of that and having a strategy in place to address it.
Mm. And also, I'm guessing some families, they're just happy with the capital appreciation over time. They're not earning as much income. I'm not advocating for that. But some families, that's what they're happy with. It becomes more of a lifestyle focus for them.
That's right. And that's up to them. At the end of the day, it's their capital and they can do what they like. My personal view on that is as long as they're not eroding environmental capital or expecting the taxpayer to prop them up, then that's fine.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Now, mate, you're working with arguably some of the top 1%, you know, the elite, the best of the best. Now, what's one piece of advice from working with those people you could give anyone who's stuck in a rut or just in the day-to-day? What do you think they should be focusing on right now?
I think what the top performers do is they've got an unrelenting long-term focus on the fundamentals. For whatever their production system is, whether it's dairy or pineapples or beef, they know what the fundamentals are, they've got a focus on them, and they've got a long-term view. Agriculture is a very cyclical industry, so it's taking a long-term view on focusing on them. So for beef, it's maximising the grass grown through understanding land condition, matching stocking rate to carrying capacity, maximising herd productivity, targeting that herd expenditure, maximising labour efficiency. But then taking a step back from the operational, I think it's important to have a clear vision for the business. What are they all working towards? Which can sound a bit wishy-washy to some people, but I think this is becoming more and more of the management practices in agriculture, which I think is good, where people are happy to talk about their visions and their goals. But if you get a group of people, they're clear on what they're working towards and they're all working together towards that, that's pretty powerful and that makes it easier to ride through those tough times too, I think. Yeah, just that agriculture is always going to have ups and downs. So having that long-term focus on the fundamentals and being clear what you're working towards, I think puts people in good stead.
Yeah, and to the top producers, in your observations, or if I put you on the spot and asked you to give me a number, which is probably a little rude, but how much of their time would you say the top producers are spending working on the business rather than in the business? And what I mean by that is they're, you know, either strategically planning, they're getting advice, they're running the numbers, they're sitting in front of the computer, they're not, you know, out fencing, riding a horse, you know, whatever it might be. How much time do you think they would be allocating to that, do you think, Ian?
Oh, I couldn't put a number on it, but I'd say a lot. And it does vary with the scale of the business. You know, bigger scale operations do have probably the ability to sort of step away from the operational because they've got the scale to have people under them. But as you say, sometimes people need to, you know, we spoke about before, invest ahead of the curve to have those people there. But what I'd say is they always have that big picture, long-term perspective. So even if they are out there fencing or mustering or whatever, you know, they are thinking about the big picture, looking at that and then taking the time out to make sure they're on top of their numbers, prioritising that office work, not, you know, treating the office like a black snake that you avoid at all costs, doing what needs to be done in there as well to be able to manage a multi-million-dollar business, as well as make sure everything outside gets done. Because at the end of the day, if things outside don't get done, then, you know, nothing gets done. But having that balance in there as well, and what that looks like is going to vary for the business and what scale they've got, but it's just about prioritising that big picture and having the operational fall in under that effectively, and does help give that direction and purpose as well.
Yeah. Now, mate, as we've talked about, it's dried out a little bit across a lot of the country. Interest rates have gone up. Livestock prices have gone down. You're talking to producers that are really prepared for this. What's their attitude right now at the moment? You know, how are they thinking about the world? What mindsets are they sitting in every day?
Oh, I think it is varied, but I think they understand that this is part of the cycle. I think it's easy in times like this to think that, you know, things have all turned around, but just taking that longer term perspective and saying, you know, this is part of the cycle. They had, you know, a few good years where profits were high, and that was about preparing themselves for what, you know, everyone knew it was going to turn. No one expected, you know, input costs, cattle prices, interest rates, and in some parts of the country, season to all come together. But over time, they're all going to revert to the mean. So it's about taking that longer-term perspective and understanding this is a part of the cycle that needs to be managed is what I think I'm observing.
It's interesting. The reason I ask that, mate, is I remember a number of years ago I had a client who what I would have like I considered was a bloody good operator. And I remember it had been dry for a fair bit of time and everyone was in meltdown about the dry. And I remember I said to him, I said, what do you think about the rain, so to speak? And he just looked at me, said, I don't think too much about it these days. He said, eventually it's going to rain. He says, I just focus on what I'm doing while it's not. And so I'm prepared when it does rain to slingshot out at the other end. And it was just a completely different mindset, you know, talking to one person that's just, you know, and it's very easy for me to say when I'm not living it, but they're obsessed over it's never going to rain. And then someone else is going, you know, very flippantly, it's just like, I don't even know why we're having this conversation, Ben. It's going to rain. It'll eventually rain. We just need to get on with business. And it was just a real contrast for me back at the time.
That's right. And I know some people are looking at this and saying, okay, well, the upside of this is there may be purchasing opportunities come up. There may be the opportunity to buy those that, you know, may think it's not going to rain again or cattle prices aren't going to come back or are overextended. And they're looking around for opportunities to expand their business in this time, which is a bit like that Warren Buffett quote, being fearful when others are greedy and greedy when others are fearful.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Now, mate, second last question for us before we start to wind up is where can people find more about the Australian Beef Report online and purchase this thing? Because I know a lot of people, there's a fair bit of demand for it, isn't there?
There is. So it's on our website, which is bushagri1word.com.au. There's information there on the Beef Report, background on it, and it can be purchased there, Ben.
Yeah, perfect, perfect. Now, I normally like to end up the podcast, Ian, as you know, last time is what's your definition of true wealth? But, you know, you've already answered that, so I'm not going to let you off that easy. I'm going to put you on the spot again. But, mate, what would be a piece of advice you would give 25-year-old Ian? So if you could jump in a time machine, go back, have a beer, have a coffee with 25-year-old Ian, what would you tell him?
Oh, there's a lot. I think this is a good question, Ben, but I'd say probably back yourself more, and also you don't have to know everything. I think knowing what you don't know is as important as what you do know, and having access to people, being able to pick up the phone to people who do know in other areas is a pretty important thing I've picked up and would have put me in good stead to know that a bit earlier, I think.
Yeah, that's a really good one. I mean, mine's exactly that. It's like back yourself and get stuck into it sooner rather than later, because I think the scientific research shows something along the lines of 85% of things that you worry about never occur, and it's only about 3% of those things that do occur that are actually significant. So, you know, all of our worries we should probably ignore. But it's interesting. I heard this the other morning on a podcast, Ian, and they said they're talking about wisdom and knowledge. And sort of talking to that point you made about, you know, realizing I didn't have to know everything back when I was 25, someone said to me, the danger with knowledge is the more you know or the more you learn, the more you learn how much you actually don't bloody know. And so we think that we will learn and learn and learn and we'll get to a point where we'll be full and we'll go, wow, I know pretty much everything. But the reality is the older I get, the more I'm realizing how much I actually don't know, which is a real sobering thought as you get older.
Oh, it is. I think that's an important part of personal growth and maturity is having that awareness and accepting there's a lot you don't know as well. But yeah, knowing what you do know, sticking to your area of competence and mastering that.
Yeah, yeah. And curiosity is another really important one is being curious about the world and listening to other people's points of view. As you mentioned, you know, calling people, asking for help, having the conversations and communicating, I think is really important. So excellent. And what was 25-year-old Ian doing back then?
25-year-old Ian would have been, I think at that stage, working for the DPI in the Northern Territory. Having quite a good time dealing in Alice Springs, working with a lot of stations around Alice Springs, and probably not far off going and working for the NT Cattlemen's Association, which was another sort of quite enjoyable period of my life where I learned a lot.
Mm. Yeah, completely different to me, mate. I was living in London working for a hedge fund. The opposite end of the scale.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, look, mate, that's fantastic. Really appreciate you coming back on today. I've taken a whole heap of notes there. I think it's great. For anyone who's wants to get a copy of the Australian Beef Report, as Ian said, www.bushagri.com.au. You can order your copy there. And I know, as I said, I've got a whole lot of highlighting done here, and I'll probably read it again to make sure it all settles in. So thanks very much. And look, from an industry point of view, I think it's an exceptional resource. I think whenever anyone comes out with data, it's always going to ruffle a few feathers because people don't look at the data. And as you said, you guys do this off the back of your own efforts. There's no sponsorship or anything like that. So I just want to say from the industry point of view, thanks for doing this. And I think a lot of people will be getting a lot of value out of it.
No, I appreciate that, Ben. Thanks for having me on the podcast. And yeah, keep up the podcast. I quite enjoy listening to them. So thank you.
Now, before we finish the episode, I've got a couple of key takeaways I just want to restate. The first one is, with rising interest rates, rising input costs, falling cattle prices or falling livestock prices, and seasons being less than ideal, Ian's advice was make sure you've got a long-term focus and get a very clear vision for the future. Make sure you know that vision, you can articulate that vision, maybe even write the bloody thing down, but make sure you've got that, because when things get tough or you've got to make choices, you want to know what you're doing it for. And the second part of that was to focus on the fundamentals. So make sure you don't get distracted, you still focus on those fundamentals and push the business forward. Now, the second key takeaway there for me was you can't starve yourself into profit. If you're going to be reviewing your costs, and you should, make sure you keep spending it where it matters. Don't cut off your nose to spite your face. Now, I'm also all about taking action. So I just want to give you one little task that I'd love you to go do if you want to get better. My question for this is, are you creating enough time to just think? And if you are thinking, have you created enough bandwidth in your life to do high quality thinking? So there's pressures from every direction. There's family, there's business, there's everything that's going on in the world. There's weather, there's commodity prices, there's interest, you know, there's so much noise. So are you creating just enough time to think or do high quality thinking? And so what I want you to do is I want you to go and sit down for 10 minutes, somewhere quiet, somewhere with no distractions. Piff the phone in the bin, or maybe not in the bin, chuck it in the office, get away from any distractions, family, employees, business work, TV, radio, whatever. And I want you to ask yourself two questions. The first one is I want you to think about the person you were 10 years ago. Now, if you're 40, that would be 30-year-old you. If you're 50, that's, you know, 40-year-old you. I want you to think about that person really clearly. And I want you to write down what advice would you give them right now if you wanted to make your life better right now. So in other words, think, if I wanted to be in a better place at, say, 40-year-old Ben, what would I have to tell 30-year-old Ben to actually do? Now, once you've done that, I want you to then think about the person you're going to be in 10 years. So if you're 40-year-old Ben, you'll be, you know, you're thinking about 50-year-old Ben. If you're 20-year-old Mary, you're thinking about 30-year-old Mary. And if you were doing that, what advice do you think they'd give you? Okay. And I want you to write that down as well. And then just take a couple of minutes just to reflect on that advice would be and think, well, that's the advice. Am I actually doing that? So that's it for now. If you enjoyed the episode, you could do me a huge favor by giving us a 5-star rating on Apple or Spotify. But best of all, you could pass on the episode to one of your family and friends and share the wealth and wisdom. I'm Ben Law. I'm your host, and I'll see you next time.